You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hello.
Glad to have you. Glad to be here.
Yeah.
We are 2023. We are entering a new year for the Over and Back Podcast. Year 9, I believe.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We start planning that 10th party. That's a big party. That's a big round number we gotta celebrate for.
Right. Yeah, we're getting there. But so, you know, we don't always go along with newsworthy events, you know, because obviously we're a history podcast. We talk about history. Sometimes we tie them into what's going on. But yes, we have, I won't call it breaking news, but the San Antonio Spurs this week, in fact, Friday, January 13th, 2023, I was about to say 2003, which is a long time ago, 20 years ago, in fact, 2023, are going to be playing in their old home, the Alamo Dome, for one last time, trying to break the NBA's all-time regular season attendance record.
I love it.
Glorious, yes. San Antonio Spurs. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the San Antonio Spurs, it's their 50th anniversary season, which unfortunately it's like their worst season they've probably ever had, which is not great. You know, they've been a charter franchise, a model franchise we've talked about on this show for forever. Like, people don't realize how long that team has been good for, like, and really, really good. Like, since David Robinson, pretty much up until a couple years ago, they were like great. They were like really, really, really great. And even before that, they were like solid as hell. They really haven't had a prolonged streak of being bad. It does suck that this is the year, but that's all right. It's for one night. It's not going to matter because that's called Back Home in the Dome. First time since 2002. Yeah. They're going to host the defending champion Golden State Warriors, unfortunately without Steph Curry. So yeah, a lot of the plans maybe not working out quite as well as the Spurs wanted, but yeah, it's Friday, January 13th. They are trying to break the NBA's all-time attendance record for a regular season game by filling the Alamo Dome here. So we'll see. They've configured it to utilize the entire stadium, so not one of those weird. And we're going to talk about those. This whole episode's going to be about giant stadiums hosting basketball games. They're not doing the Detroit Pistons blue tarp. We're not doing it. No, they are going to configure for the entire stadium, and they are looking to hold
the whole damn thing,
the whole freaking thing. And they're trying to hit 65,000 fans in attendance this Friday. I have not checked what ticket sales look like. I'm hoping to just watch the game and see what it looks like. I hope they're getting there. I know they're doing in the Alamo Dome for our wrestling fan friends. We'll know. WWF, in the midst of a pretty bad business year in 1997, tried to get as many people into the Alamo Dome for Royal Rumble 1997, and essentially tickets could be had for, like, you just had to ask somebody, and they're like, here's 27 tickets to the Royal Rumble. Sure. Tell all your friends, have them come get free tickets. Like, they just wanted to sell anything, you know, and that's kind of what the Spurs have done too. I think the tickets are extremely affordable to get in here because they just want to have this thing. They want it to be a thing. And I hope they do it. I hope they achieve it. And I guess we'll see on Friday. It could be all for naught when 20,000 people show up, and it's just sad.
Road trip to San Antonio.
I bet San Antonio didn't love it, but sure.
Okay, fair enough.
If it's with you, I'll go. You know what? If it's with you, it's technically a business expense at that point. For back, so we can write it off on our taxes. You know, yes, I'm in. Let's do it. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm sure HR will support that.
You know, right, we'll have to run it up the ladder of over back HQ and see what we have to say.
Yeah, it's we're like our fourth CEO in like 2 years, so it's a little bit. It's if we even ask at this point, I'm not even sure who we ask at this point. Yeah,
but, I don't even know where to drop my expense reports off to these days. It's wild here in HQ, but
we've had a lot of reshuffling. And anyway,
the key card still works, so that's all that matters. But yes,
that's all that matters. Better than Twitter. So
Yeah, but we're going to do a fun little show here. We're going to talk about some of the best and some of the worst attended games in NBA history. Some oddities, some weird games, some games that you would not believe are the most attended games in NBA history, some that you might remember being the most attended games in NBA history, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
We are going to talk about some guys in some games.
Yep, we are going to do that. Yeah, so let's get this one out of the way first. Now, this calling an honorable mention, and the Spurs have had to kind of say it as well, because they're saying we're striving to break the NBA's all-time attendance record for a regular season game here in the Alamo Dome, because the 2010 NBA All-Star Game kind of throws things off, because they had 108,713 people for the All-Star Game. That is going to be hard to top for anybody. I guess if the Dallas Mavericks get really, really good and they're hosting, you know, Game 7 of the NBA Finals, they can move things to the Jerry Dome and see what happens. But probably not. They're probably not going to do that. So here's where you would insert the everything is bigger in Texas line if you were a hack comedian or whatever, or a newscaster or whatever. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to say insert that line there, you know. Instead of actually earnestly making the joke, but
ironically comment on it, you know,
right. Point it out.
But you're a creative podcaster. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this is the first All-Star game in Dallas since 1986. They wanted to do it big and host the finale in Jerry World, the affectionately known 18th. I think it's has it changed? I forget if it's changed names or it's just Cowboys Stadium or. Yeah, what is it? I guess it's AT&T Stadium.
You are asking the wrong person about
I want to say it's AT&T. Okay. So I believe it's AT&T Stadium. I believe it is AT&T Stadium. You can confirm if I'm wrong or not. I believe, I'm almost positive it's AT&T Stadium. But announced attendance for that, as we said, 108,713, the all-time attendance record for the NBA and the sport of basketball. So the previous verified record for attendance at a basketball game before that was December 13, 2003. But it's college basketball, and who cares about college basketball? Get out of here. Kentucky, Michigan State, Ford Field, Detroit. Get that out of here. Who cares?
Ugh. Yeah, who cares?
Harlem Globetrotters, and I don't know if their attendances are as farcical as their games are, but they claim that they had 75,000 people at one of their exhibitions in West Germany in 1951. I don't know if that's true or not. And then there's a European Cup Winners' Cup matchup between Athens and Prague in Athens in 1968 that's believed to have an attendance of 120,000 people in attendance. But that has never been verified, so we don't know for sure. Now, the previous record for an NBA All-Star game was 44,735, and that was set at the Houston Astrodome for the 1989 All-Star game. Now, that one, that All-Star game there, and again, this is per Wikipedia. Not me or Jason, who are both pro wrestling fans and know our pro wrestling history, but Wikipedia says, quote, of that 1989 All-Star game, again, not Jason, not me, quote, this event also broke the record for the single largest attendance for an indoor event previously held by WrestleMania III in 1987. Sorry, that was the 2010 All-Star game that beat the WrestleMania III largest attendance for an indoor event, so... 93,000, 71,000, 73. We're not doing that show here. That you've probably done that show before. I know I have. So we're not going to do that one here, though. So
no, that's all right. And everyone who's not a wrestling fan is like, what the hell are you talking about?
What are you guys talking about? Why do you care so much about WrestleMania 3? Why does this matter?
You're better off not knowing.
Yeah, just don't worry about it.
You're better off not knowing.
Don't worry about it.
Right.
So anyway, nonetheless, the 2010 All-Star Game MVP was Dwayne Wade. He scored 28 points, dished out 11 assists, got 6 rebounds and 5 steals, helped the East defeat the West 141-139. And now, Jason, and I don't know if you've looked this up, and I hope you have not. I want you, Jason, and play along at home. Feel free to play along at home as well.
Okay.
All right. The head coaches for the 2010 NBA All-Star Game, the one that set the all-time record for indoor attendance for an NBA game, I want you to try to guess who both the East and the West head coaches were in the 2010 NBA All-Star Game.
Okay. So this would be the 2010 season. This was LeBron's last season in Cleveland. Now, Cleveland was not quite as good in 2010 as they were in the 2009 regular season. They won like 60 plus games, 65 or something like that game. So I'm guessing that Mike Brown was the 2009 All-Star coach. I'm guessing it probably wasn't Doc Rivers. I don't think Boston was quite as good in the regular season. I am going to go with Stan Van Gundy as the East coach.
Oh, very good, Jason. Yes, Stan Van Gundy, your East representative, helping your Orlando Magic
to Orlando Magic.
It's a tremendous record, heralded by MVP candidate Dwight Howard, good friend of Stan Van Gundy, of course, a great coach-player relationship at that time, I'm sure. And then your West star coach.
All right, so
it was Phil Jackson the prior year, in case you're wondering.
Phil Jackson the prior year. Okay, yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, so 2010. Okay, so who was strong that season? I feel like the Spurs. Was that the year the Spurs had a really good regular season record, but got upset by Memphis? Or that was the lockout year, correct?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember. Yes. Okay, that was the lockout year. Okay, so that wouldn't have been this year. Okay, probably not Portland. Probably not Dallas. So probably not Rick Carlisle. Probably not Terry Stotts. Would it have been the Thunder coach, Scott Brooks?
Very close. It was our good friend, Furious George Karl.
All right.
Yeah.
He's with Denver.
Denver.
Correct?
Yeah.
All right. That's right. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. And they were good. No nine. You know, they made the conference finals that year against it. So 2010, they would have still been a good regular season team. I forget what they did in the playoffs, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually forgot about that too. Cause I was like, yeah, I remember that the year prior they got all the way to the Western Conference finals and everything was kind of good. They lost to the Jazz in the first round that year. So, yeah, things did not go swimmingly. And I think Carmelo was, I don't know if he was done that year or he was done that year. I think that was the year after 2010, 2011 is when he was moved to New York.
Right.
So one more year of George Karl and Carmelo Anthony back together. But congratulations. Yeah. You did pretty good. You got close. The Stan Van was a good one. Stan Van was a good one. The George Karl, that was a tough one. That was really the one I thought I was going to trip people up. Cause it's like, you don't really remember that Nuggets team being as good of a regular season team as they were maybe, but they were. And they're there. Yeah. So, all right, let's get to some of these other big time attendances in NBA history. We'll start with we're going to kind of put these together because there are ones that it wouldn't make sense to go over these without kind of having them in a group or whatever. So what we're going to start our first section with is the Detroit Pistons in the Pontiac Silverdome. Speaking of WrestleMania 3, Jason, we keep trying to get away from WrestleMania 3, but we keep coming back to Adrian Adonis and Roddy Piper and Billy Jack Hayes. Sure. And I forget who he faced, but it got bloody.
Hercules Hernandez, of course. Yeah, Hercules Hernandez, of course.
Oh my God. Yeah, my car.
I mean, come on.
I don't know how No, that honestly does anger me that I forgot who that was. So I'm going to think about that all night.
I'm a little bit sad. The Battle of the Full Nelson? I mean, come on.
You're right. I don't know how I screwed that up.
Yeah, the classic duel of the most exciting hold in professional wrestling, Full Nelson. So, obviously.
But we're going to venture over to Pontiac, Michigan. Lovely Pontiac, Michigan. And
Pontiac, Michigan.
DET3 Amazon Fulfillment Center. AKA the land that once housed the majestic Pontiac Silverdome. Yes.
I do not recognize the validity of that. I'm sorry.
DET3 Amazon Fulfillment Center? Come on.
So you may or may not be aware, you know, of course, that I'm from Ohio, but you may not be aware that I was born in Toledo. And until nine, I lived in Toledo, which is, of course, just a, you know, hop, skip, and a jump from Detroit and Pontiac. So I did not attend WrestleMania 3. I would have been 8 at the time. But my uncle, who's like 6 years older than me, and his friends got to go to the WrestleMania 3, which, you know, made me insanely jealous even, you know, to this day. But, well, maybe not insanely, but, you know, still, you know, there's a few feelings about that there. Anyway, so, yes, so I was just around the corner from this game as well. You know, March 30th, 1988, you've got the Detroit Pistons battling my Atlanta Hawks. You can say my Atlanta Hawks.
Yes, yes.
Actually, be truthful. Yeah, so, yeah, but I did not know the Silverdome opened in 1975, it featured a fiberglass fabric roof held up by air pressure. The very first stadium to use this technique. That's quite stunning.
And it seems like, I mean, I guess it was 1975, so they probably didn't have any other great ideas for it. It just seems weird. It's like, I don't know if that's going to work out. And it didn't. It worked out for a while. Yeah. And then when it got abandoned, that became kind of the famous image, was the roof not holding up from any more air pressure, right, because it got abandoned and then exploding. And then it was a, like, hey, look at what this, you know, look at what has become of this great stadium. And now here it is with all this roof just blown up and just this whole exposed stadium. So yeah, a lot of stuff.
And now they've got an Amazon Fulfillment Center.
Now it's DET3 Amazon Fulfillment Center. Great. Yes.
DET3. Oh yeah. All right. So yeah, the Pistons, as you know, started in Fort Wayne. Mm-hmm. They moved to Detroit in 1962, began to play at Olympia Stadium, long since gone downtown Detroit building, many long since gone downtown Detroit buildings. 1962, they moved to the Cobo Arena, where they are until the late 70s. And then the Red Wings moved to the new Joe Louis Arena, which is next door to the Cobo. The Pistons are like, hey, you know what? I don't want to play in a damn hockey arena. So instead of going to the Joe Louis
Way
Arena.
Too cold.
Yeah. They're going to instead play in the Pontiac Silverdome, which is where the Lions were playing. So they're, you know, and Pontiac's 20 minutes from downtown, 25 minutes from downtown Detroit. So they're, you know, one of the first teams to venture outside of downtown area. They would even further do this in a little while longer. But yes, the Silverdome had a capacity of just over 80,000 when configured for football. The initial days of the Pistons are like, yeah, let's we'll put up
I don't know if 80,000 people are going to come watch our Pistons.
Yeah, maybe not. Especially in the early 80s.
No, yeah, that Pistons is still
not good. Yeah, right. Isaiah Thomas is popular, but not quite that one. So yeah, they gave it a basketball capacity of 22,366, which is still a lot for a basketball arena at that point. They made use of a 402-by-75-foot dividing curtain to section off a portion of the stadium for the quote-unquote basketball arena. But yeah, hey, they actually got to be a really great franchise, particularly in the late 80s. Of course, Isaiah Thomas, Chuck Daly, Joe Dumars, Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman, all those guys. Adrian Dantley, who could forget Adrian Dantley.
Finney Johnson.
Finney Johnson, yes, of course, the microwave, yeah. And yeah, so they decided, okay, maybe we can get more than 22,000 here, at least sometimes. So they would section less and less of the stadium off, and then the Pistons were able to have the fifth, third, and second most attended games in NBA history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you talked about the number five a little bit earlier here. Yeah. March 30th, 1988, Detroit Pistons, Atlanta Hawks. Attendance, 47,692 for that. Number three highest tennis game ever is actually a little bit more interesting here. Detroit Pistons versus the Philadelphia 76ers, February 14th, 1987, 52,745. This was the final appearance of Julius Erving in Detroit. And as far as I could tell, that was what some of the advertising was about. It's like, hey, you want to see Julius Erving one more time? Come to the Silverdome. Come watch. You know, obviously the Pistons are doing good. Julius Erving's, you know, winding down his career. You're probably going to want to come and see this. And yes, 52,000 people said, I do want to see this. Almost 53,000 people said, let's do this. Pistons won 125-107. Adrian Dantley scored 35 points, probably passed the ball twice that entire game, I'm sure. But, maybe, I don't know. I'm sure he passed it a few more times. Maybe
a few times,
They counted a steal as an assist, or he got the ball stolen from him and it rolled over to another player. And they're like, yeah, got that, That's the Adrian Dantley assist. That's okay.
Yeah. You know, because Julius Erving lost that game, he is never allowed to be in Detroit ever again. It was a loser leaves town match. So.
He's never come back.
Yeah, he has not been during. I don't want to belabor the Hawks Pistons game, but I would like to mention that even though the Hawks won this game, 103-102, Dominique Wilkins had only 10 points on 4 of 15 shooting. So maybe just a huge arena, not good for him.
Now, the sight lines, sight lines were weird. I've always wondered what it would be like, and I've never attended a game in a big stadium like this. But I've been to big stadiums before, and they're so cavernous and so big. Yeah. And
that's...
it's just like seeing, especially in a watching a basketball game in one of those, and especially like... Maybe this one less so because you got, you know, almost 50,000 people there, so it might feel a little bit better. But those games when there's like 10,000 people in a weird sectioned off basketball arena in a giant stadium, that always felt very like it would be really, really weird to go to. But I don't know. I would have loved to have gone to one, but Yeah, you know, the stadiums of yesteryear are gone, and I don't know. Maybe we'll get some oddity ones. We got to go to the Alamo Dome. That's
right. That's
I have an opportunity to do that this week. I just need to do it.
It's paid off. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Man, I'm interested in about it. I have an option to do it this Friday. Here we go.
Yeah.
And then finally, the second highest attendance game ever, Detroit Pistons versus Boston Celtics, January 29th, 1988. That is a big-time matchup.
Sure.
Both, I mean, look, you were talking 1988 Pistons Celtics. They get 61,983 people to go there. Crowd, this was pointed out in a LA Times article, the crowd, which was larger than several crowds this season for the Detroit Lions home games, was almost 10,000 more than the previous high last February when Julius Erving made his last appearance with the Philadelphia 76ers. The crowd stretched from one football end zone almost to the other in the upper deck. I mean, we are talking a mega, mega attendance there, 61,983. And this is an important game too, because, you know, so the Pistons, they'd win the game 125-108. They would move to 24-13 on the year and get some measure of revenge after the Celtics eliminated them in the Eastern Conference Finals the year prior. And they would do it again. These two teams would meet again in the Eastern Conference Finals. This time the Pistons won, moved on to the NBA Finals against the Los Angeles Lakers. They would lose that series in seven games, but that would begin a streak of three straight finals appearances for the Pistons, who then would win back-to-back titles in 1989 and 1990. But this was a team on the come up against a team that had been there for a while, the rivals, they had just faced each other in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's the perfect situation to just say, let's sell as many of these tickets as we possibly can. Let's see what we can do. Let's go for it. And they did. And that's an incredible attendance number. But it's only good for second, but still 61,983, nothing to scoff at whatsoever.
Nothing to scoff at indeed. Yeah. And of course, you know, that was the 87 playoffs. That was the heartbreaking, you know, Isaiah Thomas throws the ball away to Larry Bird and there's a steal by Bird. And, you know, the Pistons could have won that series. And, you know, so that was added an extra bout of intensity to this game. It's actually the second game where I was wondering if it was the first game for the Celtics in Detroit, but it was actually the second game for the Celtics in Detroit that season, but still obviously a big game. And, you know, 61,000 fans, nothing to sneeze at.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Now we'll move to the Timberwolves in the Metrodome. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Timberwolves in the Metrodome. You want to tell us a little bit about basketball returning to Minnesota finally?
Rich, I would love to do that. So 1989, finally, basketball returns to Minnesota. The Minneapolis Lakers in 1960, they left. Hey, they were like, hey, well, let's get some sunlight. Let's get some palm trees, some beaches, beautiful women. No George Mikan. Yeah, let's just go, you know, let's just get back. Yeah.
Apologies to the beautiful women in Minnesota. I mean, it's LA.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're all cold. I mean, in coats and hats and stuff. It's hard to, you know, it's LA.
Yeah.
It's
I mean,
LA.
They don't they don't say, I wish they all could be Minnesota girls. Maybe they should.
We need to rewrite the song. Yeah, maybe change the song and redo it there.
Yeah.
But
maybe. Yeah, well,
it's not our
opinion.
That's what the Lakers did. I don't care.
And the Beach Boys. Yeah, the Beach Boys and the Lakers were the ones who decided that. It wasn't
the Beach Boys.
You know, we're bound by precedent here. You know,
right.
That's what we can do. So yes, so yeah, so it'd been a while since the NBA had been in Minnesota. In fact, almost 30 years. But hey, we're back. They were the Minnesota Muskies and the Minnesota Pipers. Extremely memorable ABA franchise. Yeah,
didn't quite satiate the appetite for professional basketball in Minnesota.
Right. Yeah. And I had not realized this. There was a name the team contest. The finalists were Timberwolves, which of course was chosen, or the Polars. how do you feel about that?
It's
a polarizing choice.
There's a lot of times where like you'll see those like name the team contests, and I'm always like, oh, that name's kind of cool. Like they should have chose that name instead of like the Hornets or something. You know what I mean? Like, no, this one I'm like, oh, thank God the Timberwolves won. Like, good God, the Polars?
Yeah.
What are we doing? Yeah. The Polars? You're not even that close to the pole. You're in Minnesota. Like, when they get in a team in Antarctica, yeah, sure. Like now they can be the Polars, but that's a strange one. Yeah, thank God the Timberwolves won. That's a bad semifinalist there, the Polars.
Yes. So anyway, so the new team owned by Marv Wolfenson. Is that real? We're sure about that? Marv Wolfenson was the owner of the Wolves.
I think that's a working name. Yeah. Going back to the wrestling thing, there is no way that a man now that I read that his name is Marv Wolfenson, Do we have a Charlotte Bobcats thing going on here? Was he like, Timberwolves, that'll be nice and strong. Like, let's go with the Polars, Minnesota Polars. Actually, I'm switching gears here. Screw it. This should have been the Polars. Like, I'm a little weirded out by his name. I hope either A, that was a made up name that he it was like Marv Weinstein or something like that. He was like, make it Wolfenstein. So that'll Wolf, the Timberwolves or whatever. Or I am kind of worried that he was like, Wolf, that's a strong name. We should do something with wolves. Because my a little worried about that.
Maybe he was an actual wolf. So like a werewolf.
Yeah, true.
Then it's okay. Yeah, then
it's fine.
Yeah, so he and the other owner commissioned a brand new stadium for the Wolves, the future Target Center. However, wasn't going to be ready in time for the Wolves' first season. They play in the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome, which had opened in April 1982. It was the home of the Minnesota Twins and Minnesota Vikings. It's interesting that no one ever names their team Minneapolis. It's always Minnesota. And, Indianapolis has the same problem. Although I guess it's the Indianapolis Colts.
Yes.
So never mind. Minneapolis only has that problem. It's a lot of syllables. I get it. But, you know, it's Minneapolis doesn't get, and I guess they're St. Paul too. That's a little, all right, fair enough.
Twin Cities and whatnot. They're like,
Twin Cities and all that.
Minnesota then. Screw it.
Fair enough. So to date, the Metrodome, only venue to have an MLB All Star game, a Super Bowl, an NCAA Final Four, and a World Series, two of them, in fact. So, and of course, this gave the Wolves a chance to have some huge crowds, just like the Pistons in the Silverdome. Eventually, they would break some all-time attendance records. We'll get on that in a little bit. The season started, with the Bulls, they got 35,000 people to watch the new team take on Michael Jordan, the Chicago Bulls. And Jordan scored 45 in that game, much like the future number that he would have to 45.
Yeah, maybe he was inspired. He was like, that time I really did some good job against the Timberwolves. That should...
Right. Yeah. 45. Yeah. And 3 years later, he decided, I'm going to take that number. Yeah. The Wolves, not a good team, as you would not expect a expansion team to be. The team leader in points per game was Tony Campbell, who had scored at 23.2 points per game that year. His previous high was 11, and it scored 6.2 points per game the prior year for the Lakers. So, I'm thinking that maybe they're just being a guy who could score on an expansion team was most of that. So
that's a cool role. I would love to be that. That sounds awesome to be like, hey, look, you are kind of a journeyman. You're not that good. You want to score the basketball all the time for us because we're going to be bad? It's like, sure. That sounds awesome.
Take a lot of shots. Somebody's got to take the shots.
Yeah, exactly.
So, the Wolves 22-60 that year, but hey, they made a few huge memories along the way. They had the seventh and fourth highest attended games ever. The seventh highest attended was the Wolves versus Magic from April 13th, 1990, 45,000. This is pre-Shaq and pre-Penny. So why everyone's interested in the Magic outside of the Magic having been the other expansion team that year, not sure, but sort of interesting. And then 4 days later was the Timberwolves against the Nuggets. Another bit of a strange one, 49,551. Pretty random to be a record setter. It's right at the end of the year. The Nuggets were 41-38, so they were okay, but didn't really have. They got Fat Lever, they got Michael Adams, they got Alex English, they got Joe Barry Carroll, but none of those guys were really stars. And of course, the Wolves have the 22-win roster. So it was the last home game of the year, and I think the Wolves, they really had a big incentive to get over 1 million people in the stadium for the entire season. So they basically did everything they could to pack the place.
Yeah, and it worked. Did a big campaign, a big deal, big. We got to get here. We got to get the attendance. We're going for the million. We're going to do it. And it worked. They end the season with 1 million, just over 1 million. I'm not going to read the whole number because that'd be annoying to listen to somebody read the whole number. Right. But they got there. They did it. It was the final game of the entire regular season. It was against April 17th, 1990, against the Denver Nuggets. And they did it. They got to 1 million. They lose that game, 99-89. Tyrone Corbin played all 48 minutes. No rest for the weary for Tyrone Corbin.
Right. No.
Led the team with 25 points.
No fans tree. Yeah.
No. Tony Campbell, the aforementioned Tony Campbell, played a paltry 45 minutes. Load management in Tony Campbell's day there. Chipped in 16 points as well. And future Timberwolves coach Sam Mitchell, he had 15 points. So there you go. They got to 1 million. So good for them.
Good for old Wolfie. Yeah. Yeah, they of course Wolfenstein would sell the team to of course one of the big owners in NBA history. Why am I blanking on his name? But you know who I'm talking about, the Minnesota Timberwolves owner for ever. Glenn, oh. Right? Isn't that, not Glenn Campbell, because Glenn Campbell is
Glenn Taylor.
A,
Glenn Taylor.
Glenn Taylor. Thank you.
Glenn Taylor.
I only got 4 hours of sleep last night, people. So I apologize.
I like the idea of Glenn Campbell being the owner of the Timberwolves.
Yeah. Right, I'm sure you know. I'm sure Glenn Campbell like invested like in an ABA team, like for like he was like one of 50 guys to invest.
Oh, with those sideburns, yeah, with those sideburns for sure, for sure. He put money into an ABA team for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. So, all right, the so number one. Tell me about number one.
Let's do it. It is the Hawks in the Georgia Dome. Number one, most attended game ever, Chicago Bulls versus Atlanta Hawks, March 27th, 1998. 62,046 show up for that game. So now Hawks played the 1998 season in the Georgia Dome, as well as the Alexander Memorial Coliseum, which is Georgia Tech's basketball stadium, while they waited for their brand new stadium, the Phillips Arena, to be constructed. So the massive venue combined with Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls' last dance culminated in this record-setting game. It's like, hey, look, we're here, we're in Atlanta, we got the Georgia Dome. Let's take these curtains down and let's see what we can do here. And 62,046 show up to this game here. These teams also have the sixth highest attended game ever as well, November 7th, 1997. This was Jordan's return. So we'll get to that in a little bit, but we'll get to the Jordan's return thing in a little bit with the United Center. But yeah, they had the sixth highest attendance in 97. And then here in 1998, they had the number one attended game because Michael Jordan was a draw and people wanted to see Michael Jordan. And Atlanta Hawks had the Georgia Dome, and we're like, screw it. Let's do it. Let's sell as many tickets as we possibly can. And they sit on top at 62,046. And that is what the San Antonio Spurs are looking to be. They're trying to get to 65,000. We'll see if they can do it. Will they be the new number one? We'll find out. We'll find out on Friday.
Sure. Yeah, 89-74, real barn burner there. That's a score.
1998 basketball. Yeah.
Yeah.
The good old days, as some people will tell you.
The good old days.
Yeah. Some people will tell you that was basketball when it was played well. And
I mean, it had its merits.
There's good and bad, for sure.
Yes. So, and yeah, they also had the sixth highest attendance ever in 1997. So, two of the top six attendance games were for the Atlanta Hawks this season. The Atlanta Hawks were good too. I mean, they were, they at this point were 41-28. They were a contender among the teams who weren't the Bulls for the East, but obviously were nowhere in the Bulls company as they were going for the three-peat. And he's talked about, Jordan's return. Thanks to the United Center, which opened in 1994 with the NBA's highest capacity, which is a distinction it still has today, the 96 Chicago Bulls have the highest average attendance in NBA history, 26,638 at each game that year, a total of 969,149, which narrowly edges out the 1990 Wolves and the 88 Pistons for the highest total per game. Fourth and fifth belong in the 1996 and 97 Charlotte Hornets, who averaged 24,000, which was the capacity in the Charlotte Coliseum. In fact, the Hornets have 10 of the top 20 attendances of all time. It's crazy how the Hornets were so celebrated in that market and were such like through the early 90s were like a team that was like very much like a culturally relevant, with the uniforms and stuff. And I guess probably mostly with kids. And I was a kid then, you were a very young kid then. But that was a franchise that really did have cultural relevance for a while.
I grew up with like a ton of Hornets merchandise, merchandise. Like going back and looking at some of the old clothes that I still have in my parents' house, like I have like 4 or 5 Charlotte Hornets shirts. It's like anytime you could get your hands on the teal and the purple. I mean, they hit the zeitgeist perfectly for the early 90s. They just nailed it with, their ability to be able to say, hey, this, we're going to make colors that we think are going to be relevant and fit what, fans want at this time. A lot of other charter franchises obviously aren't able to kind of say, hey, nowadays teams will just change everything and go crazy. But in those days, it was a little more difficult to change your colors. So nobody else could really pounce on it, where the Hornets were like, yeah, dude, purple and teal is that's going to be the colors of the 90s. And they guessed right. And everybody bought everything that they could possibly buy with Charlotte Hornets, starter jackets and shirts and hats and all that sort of stuff. And they were phenomenon. And then, like you said, they were just one of the best attended. I mean, they had a streak. I forget what it was. It was just an insane number of consecutive sellouts and just like we pointed out there, just great attendance seasons of all time. And then it all in like a year and a half went away and they were gone in like 3 years. It's stunning what happened to the Charlotte Hornets. And now today, like, they're back, but no, I mean, nothing like it, like it a phenomenon like they were in the, I mean, that's completely gone. I mean, they're nobody team, cares. Nobody cares.
Right. Unfortunately, they don't really have any, cultural relevance. I mean, there's LaMelo fans, but it's not, it's a very thin, you know, I mean, if they get good, you know, then I could see them kind of being a cachet team again, but nothing like they were in the early 90s. So I don't think that's very, very unlikely to happen. But all right, so yeah, only two teams, the 88 Pistons, the 1990 Timberwolves, have boasted over a million in yearly attendance, of course, thanks to playing in the massive non-basketball stadiums. The Pistons have the all-time record, about 40,000 more total fans than the Wolves had, both of them, again, over a million. And then, decade by decade. So looking at the highest total attendance for a season, the 60s, the 1969 New York Knicks at 569,000 fan. The 73 Knicks improved that to 790,000. In fact, they have six of the top 10 for that decade. Of course, especially in the early 70s, the Knicks were one of the cachet teams in the NBA. And of course, New York always is going to have support for the team. And then the 80s, of course, the 88 Detroit Pistons, who already talked about, were over a million. The 90s, of course, the 1990 Minnesota Timberwolves, over a million as well. And then, the 2000s, 2001 San Antonio Spurs, 913,000. So within, shouting distance of that $1 million mark, of course, playing in the Alamo Dome and, having some big games and, being one of the better teams in the league, is that's all going to help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do want to thank APBR.org for the attendances for here. APBR.org/attendance.html is where we got all that stuff. And a huge resource, an invaluable resource for us for what we do here with Over and Back. But I didn't do the 2010s because I don't know. It didn't feel as fun. I like that. Yeah. It seems too close. I mean, it's not. We're getting older and we at some point in this podcast have to start talking about the 2010s or whatever because it's going to be thing. But I just ended at the 2000s. I just thought that was
a good point. Well, look it up yourself. That's we're all adults here. You can go to APBR and look it up or figure it out. Tell us. I'd like to know. So
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
All right, highest average, the 60s, of course, the 1969 Knicks at 15,000. That went up to 1973 to 19,000. The 88 Pistons, 26,000. The 96 Chicago Bulls, 26,638, as we mentioned, has the all-time record. The 2001 Spurs, 22,273. There's a couple very, very close to the 2007 Bulls and 2,000 Bulls, which is hard to imagine so being true, both right behind the Bulls. And I'm guessing the 2,000 Bulls, I'm guessing if you looked at the number of fans who were actually in the stands, it probably doesn't
probably
match
less.
The attendance was, but yeah.
Yeah, well, there was this weird thing that, I went to a few games that year, and yes, I can attest that the upper deck was pretty sparse at times, but there was definitely a weird thing where people just gobbled up Bulls tickets as quick as they could for years and years and years and years, because obviously Michael Jordan was there, so it was like anytime, like I went to one game as a kid, like, and that was because my uncle worked at the United Center, and I don't know how he did it was probably some shady thing. He might have stolen the tickets. I don't know. I don't care, because I went to go see the Utah Jazz versus the Chicago Bulls in the United Center in the peak of Jordan, and that was like an incredible, and then let me tell you, there was not an empty seat that day. But then it became a thing where it was like still a hot ticket, but they were horrible. And I don't know if it was just people didn't know that they were that bad or didn't care. It was just like, I got to go to a Bulls game. People goes to Bulls games. And that started to wear out a little bit. But they've always had really, really good attendance pretty much since the days of Jordan. Sure. But yeah, there's this weird period in like the very early 2000s where they're just a horrific team. But the numbers are still really, really good. And it's probably just, it's probably just, people buying tickets, maybe season ticket renewals or something like that. Who knows what it was? But yeah, the 2000s Bulls definitely stick out as a oddity there. The 2007 Bulls were a good team, a good playoff team or whatever, but yeah, the 2000 Bulls definitely a weird one. So all right, we have talked about the good, Jason. It's right. Time for the bad. All right, so these are harder to find. These are much harder to find, because guess what, teams don't usually send out press releases or like to brag when they have very low attendances. Congratulations to the Denver Nuggets, who had 4,000 people come to their game. So it's a little harder to find, thanks to some work from Negative Dunk Electics, which is a great account on Twitter, great website as well. We do have some contenders though, and again, this is not a complete list. I don't know the official word. It is, if you can find it, I would love to see it, but like I said, it is very difficult to find because again, people don't really catalog it. And then there's also the issue, like you said, where they sell more tickets. I mean, I'm sure there's games where they said 10,000 and there's like 2,000 people there or whatever, But we have some pretty good ones. We have some pretty good ones. One that everybody seems to agree is the worst in record is the San Francisco Warriors versus the Detroit Pistons, March 4th, 1965. The attendance is listed at 741. And that's tickets sold. I would love to see what it looks like on that. Like that is... That's not great, Jason. 741 people showing up. That's not great for this Warriors Pistons game here. But good news, the San Francisco Warriors won. So there you go. They beat the Detroit Pistons 115-110. But people did not want to see Dave DeBuscher and Rod Thorne battle Al Addles and Nate Thurman in 1965. But some other horribly attended games as well, real quickly. San Francisco Warriors, jeez, Christ, versus the Baltimore Bullets, December 1st, 1964, 1,929 show up for that game. And then the worst duo ever, just never have these teams play each other. The Detroit Pistons versus the San Francisco Warriors, November 22nd, 1964, 1,429. Man, nobody wanted to see the San Francisco Warriors for a while there.
No, that was definitely not a... Well, they were, they were really bad. Wilt played in one of the games against the Bullets. He actually had 56 points and 29 rebounds. Like, it looks like it was a double overtime thrill. It looks like it was a hell of a game.
Go to that game.
Boy,
those people's faces looked red when they, picked up their morning paper and said, oh my God.
and Wilt had, he had 50 points and 40 rebounds in the other game. So,
you idiot. So, you could have watched greatness. You could have watched greatness and you chose to not. Oh my God. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Right. So not ideal. Yeah.
Let's talk about the Pistons. We talked about the Pistons in the best. Well, they got a lot of the worst games too. A lot of the worst ones here. Yeah. 1963 Philadelphia 76ers versus Detroit Pistons. The announced attendance on all the box scores and the press reports was 1,000. What a very nice, neat 1,000. It's probably a roundup and probably a very generous roundup for the December 27th, 1963, 2 days after Christmas. It's 1963 NBA, probably a pretty sparsely attended game, I would imagine. So,
Maybe nobody understood what a 76er was yet, you know, so maybe that was the problem.
And then
of course, they had just moved from Syracuse.
Right. Very, very confused.
Yeah, okay. All right. You seem like you didn't understand my joke.
So. I got it then. It took me a second. And I apologize.
All right, fair enough.
It took me as long as it did.
Hopefully listeners got it. That's all right. That's okay. We got to keep the flow going, Rich.
I apologize. All right. And then March 4th. Right. We mentioned this one as well with Detroit. Again, this game was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Again, 741 announced attendance for this game. San Francisco Warriors, Detroit Pistons, March 4th. 1965, as we mentioned. So again, not a great attendance there, but you know, hey.
What could you? Hey, we have a special ABA bonus for only in the ABA. Your Houston Mavericks. Their average home attendance in the in February 1969, 378 people per game. March and April, it dipped to 333 fans per contest. In their last game in Houston, the opponent was the New York Nets, and the announced attendance was 89 people. So,
could you even play? I feel like I would just be like, nah, man, we're good. That's 89 people. That's rough.
Yes. So by the way, the Houston Mavericks became the Carolina Cougars, who of course then became the Spirits of St. Louis. So, so this nonsense did bring us Marvin Barnes. So,
which is great. Yeah, it was not good. Good news. Yeah. Only good news coming from
good news from the net. Absolutely. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say a few quick ones here. Cavernous. This isn't a bad attendance, but cavernous is the best way to describe it. New Orleans Jazz versus the New Jersey Nets, November 21st, 1978. The attendance was 6,177. Not bad, right? They were playing in the Superdome, which is a very big building. So 6,000 people in the Superdome to watch basketball. That is very cavernous, very echoey, very loud, I imagine. But that's why the New Orleans Jazz didn't hang around too long. People were not that excited about watching the Jazz in New Orleans. So yeah, this game, one of the worst attendances or the worst attendance for the New Orleans Jazz. But yeah, 6,177 playing in the Superdome. So not great. And then lastly, the 1969 Nets. Not nice at all, Jason. Not nice at all.
No.
Because in 39 home games, the hapless Nets average only 1,108 fans at their games for a yearly total of 43,195. A yearly total of 43,000 people attended games to watch the 1969 Nets. That's not good.
Yeah. Not great. No. Yes. And in fact, if you look at the lowest totals per decade, the 69 Nets, of course, as you already mentioned, 43,000. 1970s, the 71 Royals, and their second to last year in Cincinnati, 131,000. The 83 San Diego Clippers, 158,000. Yeah, no wonder they weren't sticking around in San Diego. But hey, not that much better in the 90s.
Donald Sterling still owns them, so they're still a horrific franchise.
Yeah. Now with total attendance, obviously it's going to be lower because of fewer games, but still 256,000 for the 99 Clippers. And in 2000, yes, the Charlotte Hornets. My, how things changed so quickly from having some of the best attendance ever to having the lowest attendance of the 2000s, 462,000.
Not great. Yeah.
And then if you get to the averages, you got the 69 Nets with just over 1,000, 1,100 per game. The 1960 Rose are the only other ABA or NBA team with less than 2,000 per game. The 71 Cavs with 35,000 in 1971. 83 Clippers with under 4,000. The 97 Clippers with 9,772. Although certainly things are looking up. If your worst attendance has like almost tripled in the league, that kind of shows the difference between the 83 NBA and the 97 NBA, and then the 2002 Charlotte Hornets with 11,000 per game. So like, those numbers are like all like fine. You know, it's sort of like, oh yeah, 11,000 attending a basketball game is like totally reasonable number. You know,
absolutely. So, yeah. That was like the death knell for the Hornets. It's like, we're only getting 11,000 people. We must move this franchise. Right. They must leave. They have to go. Right. The Clippers, I mean, again, six of the top 10 of the 90s are the Clippers, which is a testament to just how fucking awful, just how horrendous of a franchise they are. And also think about this. It's 1997. It's the NBA. They're in Los Angeles and they're getting less than 10,000 people at their game. But look at that team. I wouldn't go. Like, if I was in Los Angeles with all the other things I could be doing, including watching the Lakers, I'm probably not going to watch the Clippers, but still but it does speak to, like you're saying, the 1983 NBA, where they're lucky, they're not even at 4,000, and that's the worst, whereas in 1997, they're just butting up right up against 10,000 per game, and that's like the worst, and six of those top 10 are all kind of in that range as well. So yeah, a testament to the NBA's growth, but also a testament to how awful the Clippers are. So
yeah. All right, I think we got through it.
I think we did. So I as we were going, I wanted to quickly check, because I'll just buy the tickets now while we're on the air, right? Because then if I do that, like, you can't back out, you know, then it's in. We got to do it. So
we're locking in.
I'm actually just going to see if it's available. I don't think I can back home in the dome. Let's see how many tickets are available. Just two? Anybody else coming?
I don't know. We get it. Well, if it's cheap enough, we'll get a third. We'll see if anybody wants to join us.
I think they're going to have to do a... they're gonna have to get some walk-ups going here. So this might be a heavy resale market as well. But you can get a lot of tickets still available. A lot of tickets still available. That's all I'll say.
All right,
we'll to see. The game. So these are all verified resale. Oh, okay. So these people are just trying to get a little bit of extra scratch here. But I don't know if that's so. Courtside, like, where do you want to be for this game, or do you want to be as high up in the rafters as possible?
Ooh.
I think it'd be kind of fun to be high up in the rafters, right? Just like stupid high away from the game. You can't see anything.
We could literally hang from the rafters.
Yes.
Rafters, you know.
Right. Let's do it. So section 319. Okay. Let's see. We got the back rows. Nope. Not two together. There you go. Okay.
We got to figure out. Right. We got to be together. Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of single tickets. So if you're a lonely man in San Antonio, a lot of those tickets I'm seeing are like singles or in a row or whatever. So
yeah, lonely woman too.
Right. Of course. Right. I would just hope that you'd have. It feels like only lonely men would go to the Alamo Dome for a.
Well, it's
back home in the dome. All right, section 319, row 13, seat 6. Oh, ticket and shirt, $49. You want the shirt, right? Back home in the dome shirt.
Ooh, okay.
You gotta get a back home in the dome shirt. Come on.
Gotta get a shirt. Yeah.
For some reason, standard adult is $50, but ticket plus shirt is $49. Who would not choose the shirt?
Right. That's a bad decision. Yeah.
Back home in the dome. So there we go. 319, row 13, seat 6. Come pick me up Thursday after work, and we'll do it. So I don't know if that route doesn't make sense at all for you to come. Well, no.
Let's meet in Memphis. That sounds right.
Meet in Memphis. Yeah, sure. Great.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Get some BBQ. Get some BBQ. Get some barbecue.
Yeah.
And then
We'll meet in Memphis. We'll head down there. We could if we had time. Maybe we'll be able to tour Sun Records. I recommend the Sun Records tour in Memphis if you're ever there. So
Well, for doing that, I gotta go now. I think because I think we're running out of time to spend time in Memphis, but that's fine. Who needs a job?
I mean, like an hour, you know, like an hour in Memphis just to tour Sun Records, just, you know, walk a little bit and then keep going. Yeah, I think it's doable. So
I'm down.
Hey, if my mom and I did it, you and I can do it.
Absolutely. So, this has got me thinking, you know, we gotta end the show because I'm starting to think how not implausible this entire situation is, and we just need to end it because it is. I need to go to work. I have things I have to do, but God, I don't know. We'll see. I might check a flight or two later.
Maybe we'll meet in Indianapolis at some point. You know,
that's fine.
That's more realistic, you know. So, all right.
Yeah, come on, Pacers. Right, come on, Pacers versus Kings, the Tyrese Haliburton versus Sabonis matchup.
Let's get a dome. You know, let's use the Hoosier Dome or whatever
Whatever. It's the Lucas Oil Stadium, sir.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry for disrespecting the Lucas Oil Stadium. So, yeah, well, it's the put a Pacers game there. We'll meet there. It'll be great, you know.
Home of WrestleMania 9, the Hoosier Dome.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Eight. I said nine. Eight.
Yeah. Underrated WrestleMania, in my opinion.
Ooh,
so.
I like it. Yeah. Bold. It's a bold take, yeah. But I like it.
I mean, you got Bret Hart and Roddy Piper, which is an awesome match. And you have a very different Flair Savage match. And like outside of the main event, like everything else is like kind of fun and watchable.
It's quick, yeah, like quick and solid. Tatanka, Shawn Michaels. Nine. Shawn and Tito. Was eight. Yeah.
Shawn and Tito. That's a nice match. Yeah. You know, that's, eight's definitely, you know, I think it's like in terms of like, yeah, great matches overall, not the best, but in terms of like watchability outside of Hogan Sid, it's everything is pretty watchable. And you get Warrior at the end to, you know, it's kind of like a fun surprise at the end of it.
Yeah.
It's kind
and Papa Shango too.
Who doesn't love Papa Shango in a WrestleMania main event? Yeah.
Right. It's the role he was born to play. Yeah. So
it was. Yes.
Come out and interfere in the main event of WrestleMania.
Anyway, yeah. Why not? All right. Yeah, make the Warrior throw up. That was later. But anyway, all right. So before our listeners start to throw up, I think we should wrap up the show. Hopefully everyone enjoyed listening to the show. It's fun. Yeah, it's a fun random talk. I'll be honest, Rich, I did not have high expectations for the show, but I think it turned out to be fun and enjoyable and nice.
I had a blast. Yeah, I think this is going to be fun. Like oddities like this, I love. I think it's really, really cool the Spurs are doing this. And I really do hope they're able to break the attendance, because that's just cool. Oddities, more fun stuff is we need more of that. And this is really cool that they're doing that. And I think they're going to wear their old jerseys, like those cool, because they have those I don't know if they're city or statement, or I don't know the difference between all those. I'm too old to possibly know. But they have those teal jerseys they're going to wear. The logo is like in the old San Antonio Spurs logo. Like they're going to have that pink, you know, the pink and teal court. Like, I'm all for it, man. That's cool stuff. And
that'll be fun.
And it honors like the Spurs, who have a great legacy, have a really, really, really cool legacy as a franchise. So, would be kind of cooler with Steph Curry there, but I mean, now it increases the chances of the Spurs actually winning. So that's fun. But no, I like it. Yeah. It's cool. And we'll see if they break the all-time attendance record.
For one night, you and I could be Sean Elliott respecters and enjoy the Spurs.
So. Well, hey, speak for yourself. One night. Right. One night?
One night. At least one night, you know, starting up one night.
So. What's your take on Vinny Del Negro? Because
Vinny Del Negro was like a fine basketball player to watch. Not a good coach. My Vinny Del Negro take. What's yours?
Not a great coach. Yeah, I watched him coach the Bulls. Not great. Love the hair, though. No. Great hair. All-time great hair.
Oh, great hair.
For sure.
Oh,
for
yeah, wonderful sure.
All-time great
yes.
hair.
But... Yeah, handsome man.
Handsome man for sure. Yeah. My buddy once sent me a picture. He met him in an airport. And it was he's like, hey, look who I just met somebody awesome. And I'm like, all right, cool. And it's like him and Vinny Del Negro. I'm like, oh, all right. Like, why'd you send Vinny Del Negro in an airport? Like, don't do that.
Yeah. Who is the most famous person you've seen or met in an airport?
In an airport. I don't think I've ever met anybody in an airport, now that I think about it. I once got on an elevator with Ben Wallace. That was cool. But
I think I've told the story, but I was on an elevator as a kid with Jim Jackson.
There we go. Jimmy Jackson.
Yeah. In Boston. Yeah. Right after he joined the Mavericks. So.
Calling Tony Braxton. So where was Tony Braxton? Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. Well, yeah. Cause I was a big Ohio State fan.
Oh,
at the
I'm
time,
sure.
So
yeah. You had to be, as the wrestling fans would say, marking out at Jimmy Jackson in the flesh.
I was very much marking out. And I was, you know, I'd just gone swimming. I was in a hotel. So I was like in a towel and like my hair was wet. And like I'm, you know, this awkward teenager, like, hey, you're Jimmy Jackson, aren't you? You know, so that was pretty cool.
Yes, I am. Yeah. I did not talk to Ben Wallace. I was later chastised by the person I was with for not talking to Ben Wallace. I'm like, what am I going to talk to Ben Wallace about? This was Ben Wallace in his second Pistons stint, like the late Pistons stint, which was not great.
Way to ruin my team.
Recently been a bowl and that didn't go great. So I just, Ben Wallace didn't say anything and they got out and was like, how's Ben Wallace? That's cool.
Well, I met Carlito, the wrestler in an airport.
So, there it is. Yes, you got good airport stories. Yeah. You got good airports.
I do have a good airport
I'm
story.
I'm usually just so miserable that I don't really pay attention to who's around me. I just want to be gone as quick as possible.
Yeah, I don't generally either, but Carlito, you know, with the hair, he's
yeah, pretty, and the apple, notable, he's spitting apples at everybody. It was obvious.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of apple spitting. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, wow, we may have done a wrestling like a record for wrestling references.
This is we're out of control here. So. Well, it's a show about attendances in domes. It's like, you know,
sure, yeah, of course, yeah, the topic's gonna come up, yeah. What's your sleeper WrestleMania? I know we keep saying we're going to end the show, but I mean, people can leave whatever they want to.
Sleeper WrestleMania. I really like WrestleMania 7.
Okay, yeah,
that, I think that's Savage and Warrior is awesome, yeah. And I think Slaughter and Hogan's better than it gets credit for.
I agree with that. I believe I had that take on WrestleSpective back in the day. So
there it is. Yes. Yeah. Modern ones. I don't know what people would consider like a sleeper for, like, I think WrestleMania 22 is really good, but I think everybody kind of thinks that one's really good too.
Okay. What was the main event of that one?
I believe it was Triple H and John Cena was the main event.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The one in Chicago.
Yes. Yeah. 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 I did not attend it because I'm an idiot and I had an opportunity to, and I was like, yeah, it's all right. I don't want to go. And then I was like,
no, that one is pretty good.
Yeah. I don't know if that's considered a sleeper. I think everybody thinks that one is really good, but
okay.
In case I think seven's my sleeper.
Yeah, I'm a noted apologist for WrestleMania 2. So
wrong. No, you're wrong.
Well, I mean, you've got Dream Team Bulldogs, which is a really nice, fun tag match. I think Hogan Bundy is like totally fine. It's got good energy. You know, you got like just like random ass like crazy stuff. You know, you've got a lot of like fun names. Yeah, there's definitely some bad stuff on there. You know, there's nothing that's great on it. But both tag matches are pretty good. I think the Funks and JYD and Santana is a nice match too.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, no, it's just a clunky WrestleMania because they're going all the different places and doing all this sort of stuff, and it's so overloaded with celebrities. They're like, well, Mr. T is the reason WrestleMania 1 was a success, so let's get Elvira and Mary Hart. Sure. And all. It's like, all right, we don't need like 20 celebrities. Just get a couple good ones. So.
Yeah, it's a great cascade of like 80s stuff, though. It's not a lot of there's not a lot of great repeat watching to it, but like just to like see, like I'm going to like just see completely random stuff. It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'm with you for sure. I think WrestleMania 10 is pretty solid too, but I also think probably think that's good too. But I guess that's not a sleeper. That's a bad sleeper because I think everybody knows that one's good.
Okay, fair enough. Are you not a WrestleMania 9 apologist, are you?
No. I bought that VHS as a kid for some reason. I don't know why. It was just like, whoa, outdoors WrestleMania. This is going to be awesome. And it was not. It was not awesome. At any point was it awesome.
Are you a WrestleMania 11 apologist or are you?
No, that mania kind of stinks too.
Okay. Yeah. Pretty much.
Jacob and Eli Blue to hit the bricks. I got no time for him. So
yeah.
Mania stinks. Yeah. That sucks.
All right. Then I think we're pretty much, we're pretty much on the same track.
They had a bad run for a while. You know what? 13 does not get enough love. 13. I mean, obviously you have Brett and Austin. I did go to that mania. Yeah. I wasn't that big of a wrestling fan at that time. When it was over, I didn't really give a shit about Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin as a kid. I was like, good little match. My match was the Chicago Street Fight, baby. LOD versus the Nation of Domination. That was my match.
You know, I haven't seen that in a long time, but I remember that being a pretty fun match.
That match rules. Okay. Yeah, go back and
rewatch
it.
I'm going to have to.
It's even better now as an adult. It's just chaos, and it's awesome. It's really, really good.
Yeah, yeah. How is Owen Bulldog, Mankind, Vader any good?
No, not really.
Okay, all right, two match show. Yeah, nothing else really was all that good as I recall in the show. But yeah, obviously Bret Hart and Steve Austin might be the greatest match in WWE history. And then that Chicago Street Fight's fun too. So, all right, this has been a special bonus edition of We Talk Wrestling. So
voicesofwrestling.com. That's the website I help run, and Jason used those WrestleSpective for many years. So there you go, plugs.
I did. All the old episodes of WrestleSpective are still somewhere online, so if you want to Google it, it's there. So we're also done with Over and Back, which is a basketball podcast that we host about basketball history, and hopefully people enjoyed this episode and are at least some of our immense diversions. Thanks everyone for checking us out. You can find us at the Step Back at fansided.com. You can find our show on the various podcast platforms. We would greatly appreciate a rating and review. And we are on social media. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. And we are on Instagram at Over and Back NBA. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll be back again soon.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.